It's one of those nights.
One thing is something else.
Really? No, stop interrupting me. I'm trying to get enlightened here.
I'm meditating here.
All right. We don't trust, we just don't trust the transmutation that's just ready and waiting to happen. As we relax, you know, beyond imagination into whatever the present moment is. The reflex is to control and to commit and to have an opinion and to strategize, to evade and avoid, medicate. And that's cool. So the, well, consciousness loves to avoid itself. And whatever is happening in our experience is just a symptom of that. Consciousness is self-avoidant, which is a little paradoxical because consciousness can't ever depart from itself. That's a kind of a Peter Brown quote. You can't ever get anywhere else but this, and yet this is remarkably adroitly capable of avoiding itself through association, through imagination. We might think that there are, you know, ascended masters or enlightened beings or divine incarnations or whomever that have, you know, wisdom and knowledge and experience and useful things to impart to us. They don't. They can't. This has no knowledge. Knowledge doesn't work here. Advice doesn't work.
What about transmission? Can they impart some of that?
It can certainly look and feel that way. You see, even the...
here's a question to me.
Yeah.
Is there like a, on the other end, is there like a... Like another, like the same personal force that rises out of them and like interacts? Is that what's going on? I'm just out of curiosity.
I mean, whatever force it is that's animating, you know, your silly ass existence is also animating their silly ass existence.
Oh, of course, yeah. But you know what I'm saying, though, is that like when you have like, I don't know what they'd say, like, you know, real, you know, I don't know, not real transmission, you know what I'm talking about, like. A student might really feel it. Is the teacher then too as well? Is it, this is like some, you know, union, some meeting, or is it just more like that's happening all the time and maybe a student hooks in or doesn't appear to?
Yeah, right. Okay, so transmission, good, bad, and indifferent, felt strongly or even weakly or even imagined, which works too, occurs in, right, the field of experiencing, occurs
so
in a...
The teacher is having a specific experience when a student is...
Well, in the midst of what we would refer to as experiencing,
yeah,
whether the so-called teacher's experience, which we can't know, or the student's experience, which if it's mine, I think I know, but I can't really know. So the question is fun and can be answered any way you want to answer it.
I mean, as secularly and
see there is none
value.
Yeah,
like
no
devoid as possible.
Right,
like,
I know.
Just, it's just like, do you see the color red? That's it. Like,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
like I know you don't. This question seems like it's some coming from some other angle, but it's just
a simple question. Just tell me the fucking truth about what's happening when something's happening.
Or some teacher's experience.
How would I know?
I don't know. Peter Brown would be like, yeah, that's what happened. Yeah, that's
what happened when.
Like, if I'm having like strange experiences here, are you as well?
Who knows? Maybe.
Well, I mean, okay, do you have a unreliable memory that perhaps this could have happened at some of the other periods where I have been? That's what I'm asking.
Oh.
No? Yeah?
Well.
Because it's just, I don't know.
Yes, I get it.
It's just.
So what I'm trying to suggest is that there can be a reciprocity, right?
Like the dinner, for instance.
Right? Yeah. Yes. Sure. If. Yes. If you're chilling in a certain, you know, transit lounge and, you know, call it somatic or emotional or whatever experience starts to percolate up.
Yeah.
Well, sure, in some sense you could say that's commiserated, right? But not to refute that, your experience is yours, and if I'm or whomever is having an experience over here, then that's so-called.
Sure.
And we can't
sort of
ever.
Like, there's just something that, like, you know, sort of hooks together.
Yes.
A little dance, perhaps.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Well, you need some electro.
It's both. it's both. You know, it's both and both neither, and you can't really say.
Okay.
Maybe what the resonance feels like, or why it feels the way it feels, is that one's so-called consciousness or identity is shifting from the presumption of continuity to the revelation of discontinuity. And so the system responds to the revelation of discontinuity with joy, glee, terror, laughter, falling asleep, devotion, running, screaming out of the building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but all those aside, they're. I mean, I guess this is just like another one of those. But it seems like there's just like some like just impersonal thing that is like seems to be like I'm aware of it at
yeah.
this point.
And yes.
Like, it would. I would think that like other, you know, the other person is probably also aware of it. Like, you know, it's the same impersonal thing that's. Maybe not. I don't know.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, could we call it joy?
Yeah, you can call it joy. I mean,
okay.
You can make up whatever name you want. It's just
that's
like
right.
There was an actual,
yeah, you
like,
can
sort of a
yeah.
strange, I don't know, weird, like impersonal spirit. Like that's the only way. It's a good description as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, a weird, strange, impersonal spirit. Okay, yeah. Then there, yes, there is a weird, strange, impersonal spirit. I mean, no question about it. Look, this won't stop dreaming. And if we venture into a rabbit hole that might include stranger observational tendencies, then we're going to become privy to, let's just say, more subtle and crafty ways that this dreams, and those will become palpable in our experience.
You know, it seems to me that all the stuff we take as personal is actually pretty universal. You know, we just tap into the same things that others do. But also, like what you were telling our friend there, and I never did catch her name.
She didn't
say it. And it said,
luckily.
Her name is Luckily.
Luckily. You know, there's the you could say the blessing of the divine can go in two different ways. You know, you don't know what.
You've noticed.
Yeah.
The girl outside. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's all right.
I'm, yeah.
I didn't know where you. But, you know, it can go to.
She came inside looking for a meeting.
Oh.
That's not this one. We were sufficiently cordial, which is not like us.
Yeah, that's a really weird place to be.
Invited her just to sit down for a few moments because her ride was not here. So we were negotiating with her to stay if she wanted or call mom, and she used Jamie's cell phone to do that. We offered her a ride to Doylestown if she wanted to hang out a little further. So in the brief period of time that we had had her, she shared some things about some earlier childhood experiences that had to do with her need for being at meetings. So I killed the broadcast because she was about to reveal something rather intimate. And I didn't want to stop her and say, "We're recording, is that okay?" So I just,
God, I didn't even notice that.
I just shut that off. So that she could speak freely without the embarrassment of it being public or have to be edited later. And we had a nice little conversation, and her mom came to retrieve her, and then we turned the broadcast back on.
Because when I was coming in, you know, you really can't come in the driveway straight on.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and the car going out was
right in
the middle.
Oh, yeah.
And that apparently was her ride.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that at the time.
Uh-huh.
You know, it all happens like this.
It does.
So I'm waiting for
just like that transmission thing, yeah.
For the car to go, and she's not going, so I go.
Yeah.
And as I'm coming in an angle, I see this young girl screaming.
Oh. Oh, to get her.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then I couldn't stop and say, "Hey, somebody's flagging you down," because then the car had, she had to move.
Oh.
Over to let me in.
Yeah.
And then she drove away. And then the girl was just like running along the edge of the property, like screaming.
You don't. We're hoping that they caught each other.
No, because then the whole time I was in the car talking to Rory, she was pacing back and forth here.
So you're saying she left here, paced, and ran away.
Yeah, I think it's a different person. Here, I think you're talking because she literally left like 2 minutes before.
She had long jeans on,
yeah.
Green top,
okay,
like a wide waist.
So pants. So it sounds like she missed her ride.
But she just talked to her, and within a minute she left, or a couple minutes.
Is it the same person? She was looking for her mom. He said it's like another young girl. I mean, I guess her mom could be like 35.
No, the girl out here was like a young girl.
I think you said the driver was
not. I'm assuming the driver was the mother. But the whole time I was talking to Rory, she was like right here.
Yeah, that was her.
Still out there.
Is she still out there?
Well, I said, I'm wondering if she's still out there. Because I didn't see it when I came in.
Well, she knows we're friendly. She would maybe have come back up.
I can't believe it. She just talked to her mother.
Oh, you know?
Some nights.
Her mother's come back.
Like, her mother called the second time, you know, when she got in the parking lot, to say, "I'm here." Uh-huh. And she said in Spanish, like, "I'll be right down," or something.
Oh, okay. Well, then maybe she can. But the whole time I was on the phone, this girl was walking back and forth. So maybe her mother.
How long were you?
Actually,
how long were you in the parking lot?
She was in the parking lot before I came in, so I think she's talking about when
she first
dropped off.
You're talking about when she was first dropped off.
Like,
were you hanging out in the parking lot for a while talking to Rory?
Yeah.
Did you see the girl come up here?
No.
Oh, she did.
All I saw was my van try to go out, and then this girl like screaming, yelling, trying to fly
that
down.
That was when you were coming in the parking lot.
Yeah, that was the first. There. Yeah, that's before that she came upstairs, I think.
And then she started thinking, "Well, I wonder why all these cars are there. Maybe there's something going on up here." I mean, that's what I'm imagining.
Yeah.
But when I came
out
of the
car,
I think she maybe
the van had never come in.
Right. I think she may have come up here. You were on the phone, so you
didn't
notice. She had her brief encounter with us, went back down once her mother was on her way back, and she's probably safely on her way home and long forgotten about us while we're still talking about her.
Glad we got that straight.
Boy, that was...
Sorry.
Sometimes reality is like pulling teeth.
Because how it occurred to you is not how it occurred to me. Because I'm out in the parking lot.
And even if we talked it through, it's still
light years away.
That's right. We know that about you. You're always kind of
somewhere else. All right, I'll bring it back with a more direct question.
Good.
So,
okay.
Like,
great.
There are apparent spiritual experiences, right? So are
don't bring parents into this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Right.
So
okay.
Is there like a like, is there like ever like a, you know, shared spiritual experience?
How could there be?
I mean, I guess
there
not
has
really.
To be, because you say things that I'm thinking, and then all of a sudden you like you say the exact same words I'm thinking.
I mean, we're tapping into the whole same.
I can feel the stuff arising here,
yeah.
And then you give voice to it.
Yeah.
You have to be. Don't have to anything, but. There is some sharing. There has to be some spirit.
I am Miss Piggy. I'm just a Muppet.
Well, some Muppets who were talked about as being, you know, enlightened people refer that they are that they can see or that they that they can see that the other apparent person is also.
Well, sure you can.
State and there's that.
Well,
I
you,
think that's what we're talking about.
You can.
But yeah, where it's a share. You,
yes.
It is shared.
No, sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Shared is, I think the question here is what's shared mean?
I mean,
a question.
You can make it that, and that's what you're trying to make it. I'm trying to make this more basic.
All right, I'm happy to put my question away.
If I grant another person like consciousness, if I'm like going to be like, nah, like, you know, all I can prove is solipsism, but we'll just say maybe there are other consciousnesses.
Could be.
And
we can't know, but
yeah, you can't know for sure. But
no.
We'll just say it looks like there is, right?
Oh yeah,
it sure does.
Big time.
We'll say. You know, if we take that
especially when you're trout fishing.
Okay, here's a question. Does it look like they are shared spiritual experiences?
It does look that way.
Okay, yeah, all right.
Yeah. All right.
Got enough firm with about
it. It took a while to really distill the question down, but I think I got it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It does look that way.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks a lot of ways.
Sure.
Yeah.
So these things pass, they come and go.
Yeah.
So then to be more specific, Tuesday.
Right.
Is that one of those times that it looked that way?
What happened on Tuesday?
The dinner.
Oh, when we met at the Buttonwood Grill?
Yeah, was that one of the times? Just curiosity. That's what it looked like.
One of the times, it's never not that. It's always that way.
Yeah, but you know what I mean, though? Like, the thing people brand specific spiritual experiences.
Oh. You're asking me, was that a spiritual experience for me?
Yeah, well, yes, but don't...
In other words, after we've made love and we're sharing a cigarette, you would say, was it as good for you as it was for me? You like menthol? The answer is always yes.
I should have gone on Tuesday.
Really, you missed it, man.
I'm glad I wasn't there.
That would have been called group transmission.
Well,
it's funny. It's fun. It's playful. Yeah.
He just doesn't want to admit it, so, you know.
Well, I'm not avoiding admitting anything.
Well, you said it's always yes, but having the craziest, blissed-out spiritual experience doesn't look like it.
No, not. Okay. I'm not.
So was Tuesday an aberration?
Oh, an aberration in the field?
Yeah.
Like for me,
normal.
Do people like live in and you're like, ooh, have a little like, fun spiritual experience? Was that one of those like, ooh, this was a little aberration? Yeah, no. Probably not enough to really remember, but
no, I wouldn't use the word aberration.
Okay.
Because you know the let's call it the thrill or the excitation or the. You know, incomprehensibility of consciousness is always on.
Yeah.
Though, let's just say, not as frequently noticed in a palpable manner. And so when you have one has the, let's just say, the good fortune, you know, of kind of turning up the volume on discontinuity, that can certainly pass as a spiritual experience. And
so was the volume turned up on Tuesday?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay. That,
yeah. And a lot of it has to do just with, you know, serendipity factors, right? And, you know, the, let's just say the reciprocity, not just of so-called, you know, gabber to listener, But the call it a shared reciprocity. Didn't Jesus say something when two or more gathered in my name?
Yeah.
So that. It's the reciprocity of being available to the curious texture of present experience, and then the whatever means you use to, you know, get on the on ramp can blossom into, you know, whoa. Yeah. Does that work?
Yeah, we did it.
Okay, we did it. High five. There you go.
Oh, man. You can tell how long he's been thinking about this. Mm. Or experiencing it.
Well,
a long time.
Yeah.
He's really been.
When, as one starts to have palpable encounters with, you know, the discontinuity of conformist reality, you tend to remember them. And it's part of the tractor beam of your own demise. You know, not only do you kind of remember or imprint on, you know, call it a, you know, a lovely whatever crescendo of weirdness, but naturally one also craves to become more intimate with that. I mean, this experiment called the Night Sky Sangha began basically 7 years ago this month.
Huh.
So,
wow.
7 years of sobriety. So, don't ask me what's motivating me, but it could be exactly that. You know, the risk and the opportunity to cultivate or invite into a certain kind of reciprocity.
Sort of a sympathetic resonance or something like that.
That's right. It's all that, yes. Transmission is an odd word, but it's more sympathetic resonance. Yeah. And on the waxing side of our seeking journey, we have what Tony Parsons was referring to as this, you know, kind of vacillating meing and being. And in his, you know, sweet little blurb, at some juncture, who knows when, the meing and the being starts to lean more in the direction of being, less so in the direction of meing, until the being becomes and even, you know, there consciousness and its demonstrations continue to, you know, morph and express in a certain way. Because emptiness is running the show, and emptiness is like a stand-up comic that just can't get enough. You'd think emptiness would be, you know, kind of more chill, right? Not really needing to express itself in iterative curiosities as concerns form, but it can't. Emptiness can't depart from form, and form can't depart from emptiness. So they're kind of in it for the long haul together. So what appears as experience, or what appears in form, being forever infused or informed by emptiness, keeps morphing and shifting and wobbling and yeah. Suzanne sent an interesting little interview blurb with UG Krishnamurti. And he was kind of, you know, talking about if he's left alone, then, and who knows whether it's true or not, because if he was left alone, there's, you know, if the tree fell in the forest, we don't know if it made a sound, but he would say that he would just go to, well, the cessation of recorded experience. So even though his eyes might have been open and sitting on the couch and da-da-da-da-da, the senses were not functioning in a way that were leaving imprints on his so-called functional consciousness. Functional consciousness had gone into absolute remission to the point where he'd say it was that nothing could be said about it because nothing's being imprinted. There's no recording. So there's no personal memory. It's that quiet.
Almost like the deep sleep or something.
Yeah. Yeah. They can be, you know, equated perhaps. And he even said that, you know, he might sit unattended that way and, you know, not eat for a couple of days. You know, no, the interviewer didn't say, well, were you drinking water? Were you peeing? Were you shitting? You know, yeah. What? Were you just,
yeah,
you know. Yeah, right. I mean, and Ramana's stories of being in the cave were kind of also like that, where he was in a, call it, you know, from a Hindu perspective, a certain kind of samadhi, where there was no consciousness of the outside world, perhaps not even an inside world. And the body was in a kind of, you know, relaxed rigor mortis. And even thirst and hunger and elimination were not happening. But I wasn't there, you know. I probably would have got bored after 15 minutes anyway, you know, gone out to play ball or something. Yeah. So, I mean, in, you know, you hear these kinds of interesting physiological reports of a so-called fellow human being that goes into, I mean, we could call it an exaltation, but from their point of view, you wouldn't even use the word. Because it's, sorry, nothing, nothing, no, nothing, nothing. And curiously enough, that, whatever that is this. Masquerading as something. It makes perfect sense that we're, you know, shocked by the somethingness of nothing. And then create, you know, all kinds of trouble. And at the same time, in the midst of all the trouble that we're creating, or that we're, you know, the unwitting victims of in one way or another, we're also craving for the emptiness. We're kind of schizophrenic, right, that way. When we crave, though we might be craving for something material or sensual that has to do with security issues or future issues or whatever, but what the craving is really, really, really about is cessation of self.
So often, just like our friend that came in, they, you know, the craving, the only way to really get rid of self, it seems, is by some chemical. You know?
And it works.
It works in a certain way.
It does.
But
it works.
It has physical manifestations that don't work out.
But so does life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my back is killed in this chair. It's a physical manifestation.
Yeah. Yes. Well, this is a, you know, both a recovery meeting and a user's meeting.
Yeah, sure.
It is.
Here for that good transmission crack.
That's right. Crack. The crack of the absence of self. Exactly that. Yeah. So we might be, you know, haughtily talking about sobriety and recovery, but we're users. That's a curious paradox when you're working life, if you're lucky to be working on weaning oneself from substance and or behavioral abuse and slowly learn how to replace that drug with this one. Reality turns out to be much better than opioids. But, you know, you have to step up to the plate. You have to put some skin in the game to see if that's true. It's much easier to, you know, get our hands on a substance, and because its effect is somewhat fast acting, you know, chasing consciousness or having consciousness chase you, there's a little more maturity required, right? A little more faith, a little more patience. And I don't see any reason why you can't do both. Take drugs and wake up. But what, you know, what the fuck? Do whatever you have to do. Do whatever you're going to do, really. Take drugs and wake up. The one, they're not mutually exclusive.
Unless it's one of these deals where you give them an inch and they take a mile, you know, then gets ahead of you.
Okay, but what could possibly be avoided is really the question. Nothing.
What do you mean?
What could anyone possibly avoid? Nothing. Whatever happens.
Well, whatever you try to avoid comes around and slams you a slightly different way.
Okay. Okay. We don't really possess agency to make a choice or a decision about anything at all, including addictive propensity or successful progress in a recovery program. This is truly apparitionally occurring without any agency whatsoever. The agency that we claim is just that. It is an imaginary mental claim. And there really is no reliable relationship between any cause and any effect. Because all there is the refreshed and evaporative present consideration or non-consideration of the fact of experiencing. There can't be any causal relationship between a decision and a choice or a prayer and the fulfillment of same. Likewise, there can't be any sharing of anything at all, and yet you can have a good time with friends smoking pot and talking about God, or just smoking pot or just talking about God, or any number of things. See, craving is a form of refusal. Craving is a reflex of deferral or denial. Craving is not something that a self does. Craving is self. And
some would take that as a bleak pronouncement.
Well, in some respects bleak, in some respects remarkably liberating. It's bleak if you insist on continuing to be the self that has no agency.
Okay, sure.
It's enlightening if you're done with that.
Yeah. So all I have to do is get rid of the craving, and then I'm free.
Yeah, see, no, that then now you've got Buddhism. Now you're a Buddhist.
Step one of the path. That's
yeah.
To go.
See, craving is self, and craving and self are acausal. So it's not possible to do anything about them. Really. Functional disillusionment.
So all you can do is abandon them.
No.
And erase it.
No. No.
Do nothing. What are the choices?
Well, you know, if you look to Ramana's and so-and-so's teachings, you might find reinforcements along the way where the word stillness is encouraged.
Yeah.
Stillness is not embracing or abandoning or outwitting or committing or vowing. Stillness is just that.
Let it be, let it be.
Well, that might be too much. See, because even let it be creates a residue of time.
Yeah, an agency.
Yes. Yeah. Does this, here this is, does this have agency? No. Here this is. Does this have agency? I'm up to my neck in agency.
What do you mean, up your neck in agency appears that way? Or
yes.
That, yeah, okay.
Sure. As one calibrates, to the feeling tone that this is. And there's stillness of mind, stillness of association, stillness of implication, stillness of craving. Not through any effort. It's not possible. A quality of intelligence which has no codependent relationship with knowledge, spiritual or otherwise, an acausal transcendent quality of intelligence simply sees holographically, inclusively, how this unadorned emptiness masquerades as something other than itself. And gradually or suddenly, and those are not mutually exclusive, stillness comes to visit.
I mean, it always is gradual until it's sudden.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yep. It's gradual for as long as it takes until, right, it's sudden. Yeah.
That's such a useless statement, though.
Well, it's not alone.
You got me there.
So part of the giggling, you know, just the ripple effect of sees the whimsical nature of agency and the absence of agency without insisting on one at the exclusion of the other. That's the relief. Because if I was hell-bent on no agency, I got a problem. If I remain under the influence of the myth of agency, I got a problem. Stillness permits this impersonal quality of intelligence to see through the apparent veil of emptiness and form being something other. Whoa. It's the same. Form has a hard time making that revelation because it's so busy. You got a lot of
time. It has to have time to reveal that.
That's right. You see, so I got a lot of people to meet and a lot of places to go.
So I'll give you 10 minutes.
That's right. You know, it's an elevator speech. Less than that.
That's right.
What do you got? I get off at the 7th floor.
Yeah.
That's enough. Late for a meeting. So form has a hard time with the revelation of emptiness.
Well, emptiness, I mean, Terence McKenna went to India. He's like, okay, show to me now.
Yeah.
He was very quickly disillusioned.
Okay, well, Who knows? He was maybe a little bit impatient.
Yes.
Maybe he was too, quote, pridefully intelligent for his own good.
I think so.
It can happen. I know people like that.
A lot of times I'm like, damn, I could use 40 IQ points. And later I'm like, probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah.
I'll lay that down.
Difference, I don't think.
What's that? Would make any difference?
You'll end up like Bradley Cooper.
Yeah. I had like 200 IQ points. Yeah. That was a good movie.
That was fun, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I, you know, send me on a whole fucking journey. That would be the difference.
Oh, man.
I like this analogy that Rick Archer used.
Oh, my goodness.
He said this. Student was like, comes up to a teacher and was like, give me the highest teaching. He's like, okay, you're it. He's like, I don't need you. He goes to another teacher and he's like, you know, dig this ditch, you know, I'll be right back. He comes back like 12 years later, the dude's like super tired. He's like, all right, teacher, I've done this for so long. Like, give me the highest teaching. All right, you're it. He's like, oh, and then like,
all right.
After digging for 12 years.
That sounds like something Rick Archer.
I know, but yeah. I'm like, yeah.
Well, if you need a ditch, you certainly want to find a sincere student. Right. Plant these flowers, mow the lawn, clean the windows. We'll see you real soon. We'll talk about it.
Wax the car.
To the Baha'i gardens in Israel, and they have like, mm-hmm. I asked them, like, how many people does this take? They said there's over 70 people every day that tend the garden on top of like all the guards. So it's like well over 100 just on one of the shrines. So
whoa.
Like, the devotees like come to volunteer for 3 years.
Oh.
So that's how, I mean, the garden
there you go.
Is incredible.
And after 3 years, you get the highest teaching.
Yeah.
You're it. Nice garden you got here. I think I'll go out for a cup of coffee. Yeah. It's funny, even, you know, these fun kind of, you know, stories. There's another one about, you know, the grumpy devotee and the thrilled devotee. The grumpy devotee says, how many more lifetimes? Right? And the guru says, 3. And he's like, fuck! Then he goes to the, you know, more goofy devotee, and the goofy devotee says, master, how many more lifetimes? And the master says, 70. 70! I get to worship the Divine Mother for 70 years? Done. That was an old Eric Fish story.
Oh, I remember. Have you ever heard of the?
It was good
guy,
for something.
The guy, Dr. James Fallon.
No.
He tells an interesting story. He was a neuroscientist. I don't know. But he was studying psychopathy and Alzheimer's.
Okay.
And he needed test subjects for like control for the control group in the Alzheimer's. So he used himself and his family, right? And then he comes back and gets the last brain scan in that, and his like assistants give it to him. It's a name blinded, you know. He's like, yeah, this is a psychopath brain, obviously. Nice joke, give me the real one. And they're like, no, this is the real one. He's like, take the thing off, and it's him. And he's like, what the heck? Right, so then he like talks to these psychiatrists, and they're like, yeah, like, you know, you definitely are. Like, you know, you're not a violent one, but you're right on the edge. Like, you're a psychopath. And they're like, how do you feel about this? He's like, I don't care. He's like, yes, because you're a psychopath. But anyway,
right.
Eric Fish, like, he was a psychopath, huh?
Oh, bordering, yeah.
Well, not a violent one, obviously, but like.
No, he was violent.
He was violent? Oh,
yeah.
He was a full psychopath then, yeah.
Yeah.
Because what defines them is like.
He wasn't homicidally violent.
No, yeah, yeah. There's, sure, of course, a spectrum. But the reason I bring this up.
There's a spectrum. He was on the spectrum.
You always say, like, he didn't have any fear in his eyes, whatever. That's like psychopathy.
Oh, yeah.
That's like the trademark thing. Like, they don't have the brain structure that gives you human morals. So they don't like, they don't give a shit about what you think.
Yeah.
Or what's important to you. It's just whatever is important to them.
He was a strange blend of just all kinds of exciting.
Yeah. Well, like, that's the thing.
Yeah.
The really not crazy psychopaths are like really almost endearing and like captivating. And that's
a
magical personality.
Yes. He had that. He did have that.
It seemed like, he probably was.
And he had the capacity to seduce in that captivating kind of way, like on a dime and improvisationally.
Yeah.
And
because this guy, Dr. James Fallon, everyone who interviews him, they're like, wow, I would never know you're a psychopath. You're just so fun and engaging. I love to talk to you.
That's what they are.
Sure. And it's like, holy crap. Like, so
wow.
This struck my mind. I just remember hearing you describe this Eric Fish guy. I was like, oh, that guy probably was a psychopath.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Probably. Might still be.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Just ran into a rather large mouse looking at me like that far away from the shelf.
Really?
Yeah. I heard a fluttering.
Wonder what that little scream you did back there.
Yeah, I don't know what that was about.
Wasn't that cute?
You think that mouse is getting enlightened in here? He's like a phenomenous cow.
That's what.
Let's hope so.
Drawn.
Lakshmi's at it again.
I need a little pussycat here.
All right, here, ask another question.
Okay.
You probably don't have the, well, yeah, maybe you have this memory. This is way back.
All right.
Wegmans, with me, you, and Suzanne.
Okay.
Remember that night, no?
Oh, no.
All right.
I might. I mean, okay, you got to give me a little
yeah,
more
yeah,
than
sure, you know. Sure, sure. Well, it was like right after I came back from Peru, we're sitting there, and I can't tell if I'm just remembering this wrong or I wasn't paying attention.
Most likely.
Yeah. Well, I wrote it down, though, because I went back to him.
That won't help.
Okay.
But okay, I'm still with you. I'm tracking.
All right, all right. Now, you had said something like, oh, you got to be careful. Like, you were, like, speaking, like, to Suzanne, but, like, you know, also to me. But you said, oh, you got to be careful. You're going to end up, like, laughing to yourself, like, this, you know, crazy person over here. Mm-hmm. And, like, I wasn't sure if I had been laughing at that point. I wasn't aware of it. But by my memory, I began laughing at that point. So I wasn't sure, like, was I, like... Did you say that like before I began laughing, or was I just not noticing that I was laughing?
The laughter. By
wow. Yeah. You
wouldn't know?
No.
So you wouldn't remember if I was laughing before you said that?
No, I wouldn't. No.
Okay.
I wouldn't have a grain of recollection about as specific a question
yeah,
as that.
Yeah, I thought not. It's probably, but I just yeah. forgot. Because to my memory, it was like, I don't know, it was either I was like in some weird... blacked out UG Krishnamurti state or
sweet.
Like, even after you were having like a psychic premonition about I was about to laugh half a second later or
maybe
I was just remembering it all totally wrong, you know.
Yeah,
but it just to me it seemed weird. I'm like,
or he had observed you long enough to know what would make you laugh and figured that that's what
I don't know. Roll the tape. Maybe Wegmans has it on their security cam.
They might, the way Suzanne was acting right around that time,
had her on cam. Yeah, that's right.
Was she acting bizarre?
She, like, yelled at the cash register cashier.
She did?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. The aggressive side of Suzanne.
Yeah, that happens. That laugh. Oh, man.
That could all be part of the shared... experience that, you know, you're on a wavelength
mm-hmm.
of, like I was saying, that sometimes happens here with me, and that probably happened, like, between you guys.
Yeah, so I was just curious if it was, I was, like, blacked out, remembering it wrong, some half second of telepathy, I don't know.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah, I scared a guy once. In this room a while back.
In this room, or
yeah,
you brought the mouse up.
We were just having fun talking about, you know, stuff, and he was, I don't know, he was going to the casino or the track, and the Green Lantern movie or something had just come out, and there were these kind of fun serendipities. So I just started riffing on these various things, and they were like kind of like boom, 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 as if I'd reached into his mind and pulled out all of this relevant information. So he was in he was like he was kind of enthralled for a moment, but then he was really freaked out.
Yeah.
And I was like, sorry, I, you know, it's not, nothing's ever, I mean, nothing's ever really conscious. Nothing is. Nothing can be. It's the right. It's the myth of hyperbole, of anecdotal, of reference, of mind that makes it appear as if you are conscious have been conscious, will be conscious, can therefore be, let's just say, you know, super or subtly conscious. But there is no such thing.
So there is no such thing as the claimer of
no, there can't be.
But we operate every moment, it seems, as if.
Well, claiming, yeah. Craving, self. Wan. Mutu, wan. See, but we're so adroit at telling stories and weaving tales that we imagine ourselves to be independent, individual, made of agency, choice, and decision. And then we can find an incredible array, literally an array, of harmonics or evidence, which makes it look like the life I've lived prior to now, which is all occurring, right, imaginarily. It's not to deny the past or to insist that the world is round or flat. Jury's out.
I don't know about that one.
You know, or whether 9/11 was an inside job, or wherever you want to go with it. You know, lizards and stuff. I like those. This is a plasma of absolute bizarritude. And we, you could say, appear to follow call it a train of thought, which appears familiar to us as we reconstruct the imagination of ourselves in the imagination of our mind, and then have all kinds of stories to tell, good cop or bad cop, more or less incessantly. And that incessant streaming of association, which makes it look as if you are independent of craving and claiming. No,
it's just all verbs.
Yeah. Yeah. And the verbs are associated with one's sense of self. The irrefutability of present experience. But just because there's this so-called irrefutability of present experience doesn't really, really mean that you're existent. Personal existence is an overlay, yeah, on the irrefutability of present experience. Now, if one's so-called, call it mind, or what we refer to as an impersonal intelligence, starts to percolate up, then your receptors shift from reliance on anecdotal projection to availability. Impersonal, transparent, availability. And then one could say that other aspects of reality are revealing themselves to so-called you. And that would be why you could say it's worth having these conversations.
You know, this whole notion of the this symbolic communication we have with, you know, using words.
Yeah.
And then we divide them into various types of words. And you've got nouns and verbs, which are the, you know, primary parts of a sentence. And it seems like what we say so often is that nouns are false and verbs are real. And that's a huge, gross overlay.
But, who says that?
Oh, I'm just making it up. I mean, I'm just... what was that? Oh. You know, it's...
I was That's not the type of thought I came, but this guy's just making shit up.
This guy's just making shit up.
But I mean, so often it seems like you can have, and I'm making a gross, farcical statement there, but
so often,
it seems as though I get a bottom line with the verb type of a thing that negates the noun type of thing.
Inclusivity.
Especially the pronouns.
The presence as inclusivity is intoxicating. Is ecstasy. The use of symbology is, you could say, kind of an excitable overlay or superimposition on the otherwise unadorned ecstasy that this is. And the sense or the confidence that one has in the presumption of self as the intermediary, the one to whom experience is occurring, one's so-called individuated existence, the movement of sensation, the movement of sentiment, the movement of mind, the movement of time and story, it makes way, if we could say, to this. Rather than relying on symbology to capture, enhance, explain, manipulate, share, articulate, that reflex makes way for this. That's not a destination, mind you. One might think, oh, I've been seeking for a long time and it really hurts. I mean, it hurt before I was seeking. It hurts worse now that I'm fucking seeking. I can't seem to get a break here. So then one could be in hungry anticipation of what we would call, you know, ecstasy as relief. And even refer to it as cessation of self as relief. But there's no destination.
Yeah.
And that befuddles us. Because we're kind of accustomed to insisting on that we're in a place, we're in a mood, we're in a condition, we're in a state. It feels a certain way. I can say certain things about it. And I want a better state, a different place, a different condition. There never is a condition. Not a better one, not a worse one. There's no condition. And that could be a little unnerving. So we might be in anticipation of enlightenment, awakening, stream entrance, ecstasy, insouciance, compassion, dispassion, right? Good luck. And even if you do get a taste of one of those, it doesn't even last long enough to write a postcard. So you see, craving and claiming and self, well, those endure. They don't really, but they seem to endure. Craving and claiming and self endures. Release.
Well, there's a sense.
So completely unreliable.
There's a recording of the other stuff.
Yes.
And you can access that recording if you're lucky. Or maybe not so lucky. I don't know.
Well, that's right. By virtue of the strange capacity for recording or imprinting. Yeah. That craving, claiming, and self operate at all. Operate at all. So if we borrow from UG's, you know, call it, you know, strange gift, there's no imprint. There's no recording. And so there's cessation of craving and claiming and self. When? Right here? Really, right here? This is the cessation of craving and claiming in self, masquerading as the durability of craving and claiming in self. to see through it, to see the transparency of it. Well, you can give all the ascended masters a pink slip. Because there is no knowledge. There is no secret wisdom. There's nothing that will ever satisfy you because there's nothing remaining to be satisfied. Craving, claiming, and self make way for radiant inclusivity.
It always seemed like weird to me because as far as appearances go, it seems like you're like half inside this body in relation to all the other ones. But then if I try to imagine like, all right, what if you just saw like all the bodies equally and you weren't half stuck inside one? That doesn't really make any sense because then you'd be like whatever light or camera looking down, like it's all just sense data.
Yes, it's apparitional sense data. Yeah. So when Jim Carrey came out on stage to be interviewed by Jimmy Kimmel, he said, he said, I used to think I was a guy living, you know, on Earth, but I don't feel that way anymore. Now I'm the Earth or universe having the experience of a guy.
Yeah.
You couldn't get, you know, any more kind of intimate conversation about the curious nature of sociopathic dispassion right there on, you know, mainstream TV.
Yeah.
Now, whether he was, you know, joking around because he's a joker.
He's not joking around.
And because he has this long association with Eckhart Tolle.
Oh, yeah. And that's
there's no question that Jim Carrey is capable of inhabiting personas and using the a proper vocabulary in an articulate manner to convince his audience of his enlightened condition.
Yeah, and that's the first they've met. 80% of them have ever heard of, or 95%.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's the hero.
He's the
guru.
Yeah.
Funny guru. First gave one of his speeches like 10 years ago.
Who's that, Jimmy?
Jim Carrey, yeah.
Yeah, right.
You heard it? I mean, you were...
Well, he was a spokesmodel for Eckhart Tolle for a number of years.
Yeah.
So it may be after all of that association that, you know...
He gave a PM graduation speech, too.
Yeah.
He's good at giving speeches.
He really is. Let's hope. Let's hope that he is. Not that he deserves to be, because there's a bunch of people that have a fraction of his success and wealth and notoriety and talent and celebrity and everything else he's got going. Now the fucking guy's enlightened too. I'm like, Jim, leave a little something for the rest of us.
As far as experience has got, that'd be a hell of a life to live, huh? Perfect human success and then enlightenment.
Uh-huh.
What a guy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, sure. And, you know, egoically maniacal enough to pull it off. That's right.
He's not in the end. News doing stupid shit.
Was he before?
No. I'm saying it. Living the perfect life. No, he's enlightened. He's not, you know.
Yeah,
and the tabloids, the Inquiry, checking out, like doing.
Banging hookers and whatever.
Doing stupid stuff, too.
Right.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Well, he is being sued by his ex girlfriend who died by an overdose by her family, saying that he gave her his prescription drug and he's responsible for her death. Oops, I was mistaken. He is in the choir.
Give him a couple pills at the good host. All right, we've been over this.
Yeah, it's just a nice host. What can I get you?
Yeah.
Family.
Well, this is nice.
That's only because he has money. You know, if he was just some Joe Schmo, there would be no way.
Did you hear it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quiet.
Someone in the room must be Ganesh.
I'll leave them a note and the mice will heat it up.
The proof they need.
Do you have a mouse in the house?
Oh, did you guys go and see if there was some saint coming? Fudging saint, something, somebody?
Saint?
Karuna?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You went?
I met Suzanne there. We hung out for a couple hours.
How was that?
It was fun. Yeah.
Any envelope under here? No.
No, I didn't. I'll just leave it. Little thanks. Thank you. She wasn't hugging. Amici does the hugging.
Is the laughing singer or someone?
No, she wasn't laughing. People were given a note card with a letter on it to place themselves in line. And then they would write their, you know, what they needed or wanted from her as a blessing or help with on the card. And then they would go get a chance to go up to her and hand her the card. And she would pat them, rub them, you know, maybe talk to them, maybe not. And that was the darshan. Suzanne had FF. And they were on A for the longest time. And she was getting closer because then they were on EE. And she would have received her blessing, but then the guru had to take a pee break. The divine incarnation had to urinate.
Yeah. That's disappointing.
I was like, what the hell?
Jeez.
I was like, what do you mean? You're taking a break because you got to pee? Or defecate, maybe.
Oh. Gurus don't shit.
And if they do, they shit angels. They fart angels.
Rainbows.
I've seen them. Rainbows and angels. Then unicorns just come pouring out of their sphincter. Yeah. So at that point, she was, you know, she had had enough. And we got yelled at, too.
Because of you? What did you do this time?
Talked in the audience.
We were talking and they having fun, you know, commenting on everything that was going on. And some woman that was there that was just seething and seething and seething finally just
let it out. Just another one of the participants.
Yeah, just another one of the seething participants trying to get a blessing from a divine incarnation that had to take a pee break.
What a slap in the face you get right up to your turn. And it's like, oh, nah, I got to pee. Got to take an extended break.
Yeah. You know, well, the Hindus and others, you know, well, all cultures are good at divinizing whomever, whatever. And then having all kinds of symptoms and magical powers and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Just to, you know, amp it up. But that's not liberation. You don't want to divinize anyone or anything, even though, unless you are capable of divinizing everyone and everything. Right? It's like when you go to school and you got some cookies, you have to have enough cookies for everybody. So if you're going to divinize, you better go whole hog. Otherwise, you got a problem.
Yeah. Are you okay with the Medicare thing?
Yes, too late. This is my first day of being old.
Well, welcome to it.
Can I ask you? You already made your decisions then?
Oh, it's done. Yesterday was done.
Do you mind me asking what you went with?
You mean my broker?
Cigna.
Is there
a plan?
A plan A and B. Supplement. And
yeah. Oh, you went with a supplement?
Medicare A, Medicare B, and then you have to have a supplement, and then you have a prescription plan.
Yeah, what supplement? What letter is associated with the supplement?
Oh, what letter?
F, M?
G.
Oh, G. I think it is.
Yeah, F wasn't any good for me. N was stupid, and so I got G.
Oh, N is the way to go, man.
You should insult your Medicare supplement plan?
I know. How dare you?
Because I can. Excuse me, but I'm borrowing from you.
No, well, sure. Borrow away. Get out of here.
G.
No, thank you. You look good.
It's the best.
G's the best.
G covers everything, doesn't it?
G.
Is that the most inclusive?
For me, it was.
Well, for everything. If it's for you, then it's for everybody by then. Okay, well, that's... You didn't have to go that way. You would save money on him. It's almost like this.
No, and wasn't good. No,
thanks for taking your time leaving.
We won't talk.
No, we won't because I'm overloaded on Medicare. Don't you?
Yeah.
Just want to do this. Enough of that.
Okay.
All right.
Anything else?
Just crunching.
Crunching's good.
What do you think about the, you know, palm readers and, you know, those types of people? And then, I mean, and they read for these people, and then the people say, you know my grandmother's name, and you know all this stuff, and...
Sure.
His guru is a psychic.
Oh, yeah. He read palms. Yeah. What do I think about it?
Yeah, I just...
I don't.
I've never experienced it. I just can't...
Oh, you can't bring... You won't bring yourself to go see a good palm reader or a good, you know...
No, I don't feel the need to do that. Shit.
Right.
I just don't feel the need to do that. But I'm just curious, right. Is it possible? Or are people just susceptible and say, oh, yeah, that was my grandmother's name? It really wasn't, but...
Well, if what we call memory is electrochemical, and that's what, you know, so-called brain scientists might suggest, what's subtler than electrochemical? Light? Right? You keep looking, at least from the point of view of so-called current physics or current materialist cosmology, and you keep dropping down into the, you know, chemical and molecular and bonds and vibratory and light and subatomic. So it's basically the universe is homeopathic. Not made of anything. All of the actual substance that was used to create the remedy is no longer so-called physically present in the sugar pill, because it's been succussed, diluted, and diluted. So there's nothing actually remaining except the absurdly most subtle hint of vibrational proclivity. That's memory. Same. It's homeopathic. And if one has, let's just say, certain gifts or attunements to relax into the homeopathic harmonic of what memory might actually be, there's no reason why impressions can't pour in that we would refer to as someone being psychic and knowing things about us that they shouldn't know. And some people have the gift of that harmonic, that transmission, to greater and lesser degrees. Some are just exotic and good salespersons and get enough information from you and read your body language sufficiently that they can engage you in a, right, kind of a reverie where you feel heard and, you know, known about and give you information that most likely will never come true. But you still had a great encounter. And, you know, there are a number of, can we say, legitimate cases of psychics that have been used by law enforcement that find evidence and help help solve mysteries that typical forensics could not do. So sufficient accuracy that law enforcement agencies go back and use them again on cases where, you know, no meaningful evidence thread is there, but they're looking for psychic remnants of, let's say, the crime, to get subtle impressions to know how perhaps to respond. But in a sense, you know, you're your own best psychic. You're doing, we're all doing that same thing moment to moment, right? Tapping into what we might call knowledge, memory, science, but we're not. We're just, we are improvising etherically. Then making the claim that I chose. Oh, I decided, I discerned. Not happening. The sense of agency is created out of nothing at all, out of a homeopathic disappearing act. And yet it compels us so profoundly that, you know, a lot of species are going extinct. Just the sheer proliferation of, you know, homo sapiens or homo prospectus on the impact that we're having on the so-called biosphere that we share with other creatures in the land and the air and the water, and the thirst, the craving and the hunger for energy and food and material, and the amount of waste that we, you know, pours out of our urban and suburban and rural centers is just too much for the biosphere to take. So we're simply running into, you know, stress, evidence of that stress.
Did you see the movie Inferno? It was like the follow-up to Ancient
Demon. No, I haven't seen it. Right. When he goes and chase in search of a guy that's going to unleash a plague, right?
To save us, yeah.
To save us. That's right. And you're like, you're really torn because you got to, like, you know, that psychopath, man, he's got it going on. Yeah. The motive to take out, you know, X number of billion of you know, bacterial maggots is kind of, yeah, it's a noble motive. Yeah, so this is impossible. The living is impossible, and the dying is impossible, and the sustaining is impossible, and the everything is impossible. And yet, rolls on with, you know, great, great sociopathic bravado.
Glee.
And great sociopathic glee. Yeah. It just does. Yeah.
Although you did forget to add that probably most psychics are bullshitting you.
I don't know.
I mean, you don't know for sure, but I mean, I would bet that way. What about you? No? It's like there's a ton of people just making shit up. Yeah.
Wait, everyone's making shit up.
Yeah, but
there's no one not.
Specific type of shit we're talking about here.
Okay, so there's a specific type of shit. But again, the let's say the value of the encounter could engender a certain quality of vulnerability, trust, openness. And it's not the data that made the session a healing session. It was taking the risk to expose oneself to the unknown.
You are the true and justified means, aren't you?
I can be. Yeah.
Hope you don't get your hands on any deadly viruses.
Yeah, I don't know.
You're releasing that shit.
Sometimes, I love to play God as much as the next person. And then sometimes you're like, oh.
That's what I like about Slavoj Zizek.
It's out of my hands.
You don't want me to have power. I'm not the type of person you want to have power.
Yeah. Right. The collapse of craving and claiming and self reveals a texture or a fabric that is unspeakable. And this turns out to be both the portal and the fruition of that. That discovery might be worth making, cultivating. Just like our young friend was here earlier, it's never nourishing or satisfying to be in a codependent relationship with existence. Dependency on circumstances and events, sentiment and sentimentality and sensorial, it is not satisfying. No amount of sense gratification or security will do. And it takes a certain magical nudge to recalibrate what our, let's just say, most sincere interest is in. And if our most sincere interest is in whatever awakening might portend, well, then we conduct ourselves a little differently. To be free of the codependent relationship with knowledge, ascendancy, spirituality, enlightenment even, is, could be said to be a wonderful thing, but that's just an advertisement, right? It's always more important that we discover whatever there is to discover for ourselves. That's true. All right, got to go watch a basketball game.
I didn't know you watch basketball.
I don't. Just the finals.
Just the SEC.
Learning new shit about you all day today.
Really?
Yeah.
Don't be so interested in me.
We're so diplomatic. So I'm young.
Thanks for joining us, everyone.